and infrared light. The Falcon Heavy ended up delivering 24 satellites to a variety of orbits over the course of multiple hours, successfully completing a complicated mission that SpaceX founder and CEO Elon Musk called the company's toughest ever. The launch was the first heavy mission for the U.S. military. It was organized via the Air Force's Space Test Program and the third flight for the huge rocket overall. Tonight is the first of two Democratic candidate debates in Miami. 10 of them will appear tonight, including Senators Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, and Amy Klobuchar, as well as New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke, and former HUD Secretary Julian Castro. Each of them has just 60 seconds to answer and 30 seconds to follow up. Tomorrow night will feature Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, and Eric Swalwell. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Hi, welcome to Hack Hunterdon Radio Show. I'm your host, Jim Minadio. I'm the president of Zero Surge, a manufacturer of power quality filters that are used for surge protecting your sensitive electronics. With Zero Surge, you have peace of mind that your electronics are kept safe. So before we get started with my second show, we'd like to remind you of the weather. So as we check out the National Weather Service forecast, tonight is going to be mostly clear with a low around 65, west winds around 6 p.m., becoming calm in the evening. Tomorrow sunny with a high near 89, northwest winds 6 miles per hour. I was going to say 6 o'clock. 89, wow, we're finally getting close to summer here, guys. So with that, we'll do one more little quick break, and we'll get the show started.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
All right, we're back. Let's see. So it's our second show, and of course, the guest I had lined up canceled, so we're going to sort of interview him without him being here today. But I will fill you in on what his project was about. Basically, it was going to be the second place finisher, as I promised last week, for the Hack Hunterdon Hackathon. And, you know, we're going to talk about his project and what prompted us as judges to award him the second place. I know he does have a day job, so I'm sure that was part of the issue that we had today connecting. So you do have a chance to see him in person tomorrow at the Hack Hunterdon meetup, which I'll talk about in a few seconds. And we'll talk about where that is and everything. And then also we'll have some exciting local news from a small company that's just getting started. They're making it big time in the retail world. It's nice to see a local Flemington company score some big success. But first, let's talk about some innovation that's in the news. What we're trying to do with this show is to try to pull some different articles about different technology or innovation aspects of business, life. Could be the arts, could be anything. And something that you may not be able to see on a regular scan of your news feeds. I get a lot of different kind of technical news feeds, so I thought maybe this would be a way I could share some of that news with you guys and, make you think about different things that are going on. The first article I got from a website from Steve Hanley's blog, he mentioned that Tesla, so everybody knows who Tesla is, and you probably heard that they're doing a solar roof. Basically, they're going to take, instead of solar panels, they're going to make the shingles your solar panels. And a lot of people thought this was just Elon Musk's folly, that he, it wasn't going to happen. And you know, it's going to be too expensive, and there have been leaks about costs for this, that it's going to be double the amount of roof, a regular roof. But, you know, again, it is also creating power for you. So over time, if it can survive the long-term wear, it definitely will be a benefit and maybe even a cost benefit to a homeowner. So, but before you could do any of that, the most important thing is you need to get certified so you can sell to homeowners. So what this blog was talking about, he found out from the so there's a company called ICCES, which is a testing nonprofit company that does technical evaluations for building products, components, methods, and materials. The evaluation process culminates with the issuance of a technical report, and because they directly address the issue of code compliance, they're extremely useful to both regulatory agencies and building product manufacturers. Okay, so what does that mean? That means basically, I mean, we do this at ZeroSearch. If you have a product that needs to be tested for safety, for security reasons, for efficaciousness, whether it works, you know, you have drugs like for the FDA, we have to test to UL for electrical safety. And so for a building product like a roof system, you have to pass this building code inspection. And so Tesla was able to submit to this company who does the testing, and they're pleased to announce that they issued not only the International Building Code Certification, the International Residential Code Certification, the California Building Code Certification, and the California Residential Code Certification. Now, what that means is if you are interested in doing a solar-powered roof, you know, through Tesla, I'm sure they sell it through their SolarCity branch, you could take this certification. It's called ESR 4074, and you could bring it to your local town and say, hey, this material is certified safe for use in a home under, you know, whatever conditions it needs to be met. Obviously, you want to have somebody who is very well engineering or has a lot of knowledge in engineering to do this. It's not your standard roofing company is going to be doing this right away, I would imagine. More of an electrical kind of company. And then, you know, you can use this certification to tell your town that it's okay to use it, that it'll pass all the building codes. And so this is a major step for them, and you'll probably see more about this in press releases and news articles later on, but maybe you've heard it here first. Okay, so article number two. So this is in the world of food. I don't know how many of you out there have been seeing, I guess Burger King is selling these vegan patties that are made with pea protein and other vegetable proteins. You know, these burgers have been around for forever. I mean, we have family that my nephew loves these veggie patties that they used to, that Morningstar used to make, and you know, since he was little, so they've been around for decades now, but they never really caught on because they sort of taste like veggie patties. They don't taste like beef. And so, you know, in this country, the average person eats around 200 pounds of meat annually and consumes at least one hamburger a week. So the Impossible Burger, a meat-free alternative to the iconic ground beef patty, has catapulted itself into our collective food-focused consciousness. So the next time you're grabbing a bite at any of the 150-plus restaurants in New Jersey that serve the Impossible Burger, which I believe Flemington's Bluefish Grill sells it. We saw it on their menu. What most people don't realize is this patty was developed here in New Jersey at Rutgers. So Impossible Foods, the company responsible for this formula, was generated, has generated plenty of hype. Obviously, celebrities have got on board with this, like Serena Williams, Bill Gates, Katy Perry, Jay-Z, and they've invested in these this company. So with over $750 million in funding, Burger King did announce that they're going to be serving this nationwide. And I don't know if the camera can catch it, but I mean, from the picture here, it does sort of look like a regular hamburger. To me, it looks more like a turkey patty, maybe. than a beef burger, but, you know, people can argue it could look like a beef burger if nobody told you what it was. And so, you know, Burger King is going to be the first large distributor that's going to offer this. And so the CEO of Impossible Foods, Pat Brown, has said that the only customer he does care about right now is the hardcore meat eater. So he is going after this market. He's trying to appeal to carnivores that just won't settle for a standard veggie burger. So in 2016, he started Impossible Foods at Rutgers using their Food Innovation Center to get connected with the right people in the food science and manufacturing spaces to turn the idea into a reality. The Food Innovation Center helps small businesses and entrepreneurs, providing expertise and serving as a business incubator and accelerator. So, since, you know, we always say New Jersey is the Garden State, well, here's proof, you know, that it is. Since its residency at Rutgers, the Impossible Burger has gone through many variations, and this year it announced version 2.0 with more true meat-like formula that mimics the smoky taste and meaty mouthfeel of a beef burger while still holding up to the flames on a grill. So it's a vegetable-based product that looks, feels, and tastes like a hamburger, and the new version is even closer to what real meat tastes like. It goes on and on about how it caramelizes like meat and such. So what makes it taste like meat? So what they do give you at least a little clue. It's called heme, I think is the pronunciation. It's a molecule found in every living plant and animal. And what makes meat taste like meat is that bloody taste that you get when you bite into a burger. And people have been craving it since the dawn of humanity, according to this author. Excuse me. And Impossible Foods has discovered how to create a plant-based heme flavoring that tastes just like beef. And they do it by genetically engineering yeast. So they knew that they had this formula and they're ready to make the burgers. And so they started marketing them and getting approval from USDA, from the FDA, and they've grown to 7,000 restaurants worldwide now. So if you're down at Bluefish or you're at Burger King, check it out. Try it. I know they sell them at some of the like a Whole Food type places. And I guess there's another brand called Beyond Burger that also is very similar. So I know my son and my daughter love them. I'm still on the fence, but, I've tried it, and it's not too bad. So, we're at a commercial break here, so we'll come back with more from Hack 100 and Radio.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Okay, we're back here. Jim Minotti here with you from Zero Surge for Hack Hunterdon Radio. And we were going over some innovative news stories that are making the waves. Just forgot to attribute the last story was to Rutgers.edu from their website, from their Innovation Center. And, you know, we'll be visiting nearby there in a couple weeks for a function. So I believe there's going to be a tour. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, some of the other innovation that's going on at Rutgers, specifically in that department and also in the chemistry department. So it'd be interesting to see. I have a few more stories, and then we'll get to the rest of the show. So this last story affects pretty much all of us in the East Coast. If you were having issues with your internet connection Monday, there's probably a reason for that. This is an article I got from Slate Magazine, slate.com, but it's attributed to a Wire story from, I think, Chip Brownlee is the guy's name. And so he's saying that outages, you know, obviously are a fact of life on the internet, but for the past few days, if you noticed, you know, Google Calendar went down for a few hours, Netflix, Hulu, Xbox Live had problems. And Monday morning, users in the Northeast were hit by very widespread outage, Verizon users especially, and then services that are delivered by a company called Cloudflare, which is one of those big internet companies that affects a lot of different websites. They're little known, but they're the backbone of the internet that provides the security and performance services to 16 million websites. Okay, so that's a lot of websites. Even Down Detector, which is for those tech of you guys that are common internet users, Down Detector is a website that tracks whether other websites are up and running. So if you're having a problem with, you know, your Netflix connection, before you start tearing your hair out over your modem and how it's connected, check downdetector.com and they'll tell you if your website, you know, like Netflix or Hulu, is having issues in your area. They have a little heat map that shows you on a map where everything is down and how long, how many people are reporting outages. So it kind of highlights, you know, Monday's outage highlights how fragile the internet is and that all it takes is one little error. In this case, it was a small company in Pennsylvania that caused swaths of the web to break with little warning. So in Monday's case, it was because the way the internet was mapped was broken. So at around 7 a.m., the outage started affecting Verizon and began to spread through Amazon's Web Services, which is another piece of the behind-the-scenes internet infrastructure, Reddit, the podcast app Overcast. There's a chat service called Discord, Twitch, WP Engine, which is the web hosting service. They were all having issues. And also, as I said before, the Cloudflare websites were all having issues connecting. And so the Cloudflare originally was getting the blame for this because they're the bigger company. They had all these websites. But then people weren't sure if it was Verizon's fault. And so skipping through some of the article here, basically they're saying that it was this protocol. It's called BGP, or Border Gateway Protocol. So what that is a mapping of the routes that all the data flows through on the internet. So it's kind of like the postal system of the web. So it takes the traffic and the data and picks the most efficient route to get that traffic from somewhere else on the internet to you. So it works great most of the time, but something really went wrong Monday. That something was a mistaken signal sent out by a company called DQE Communications, a small commercial internet service provider that services about 2,000 buildings in Pittsburgh. According to Cloudflare, the little company said these 2,400 networks, including some bits of Cloudflare, some bits of Amazon, some Google, Facebook, that those networks are ours, and you can send us their traffic. So they're saying basically, hey, internet, you know, you could send all your traffic down our road. And it turned out this road was a dead end. Okay, so what happened was all the internet traffic that was caused by this misconfiguration was optimized to go down DQE Communications network. And so they commonly call this a root leak. And the problem is normally there's checks and balances and security that prevents this from happening. Well, obviously we need to update all of that infrastructure. So, because this went all the way up to Verizon, which apparently was accepting the route as and passing them on and telling other servers, hey, send your data down this road, this dead-end road. As a result, the massive swath of the internet was clogged up. And it was basically going to a cliff to nowhere. So, again, for Andy out there, this is another Thelma and Louise reference. It was basically the ways of the internet telling thousands of drivers to go straight into a ravine. So the problem only lasted a few hours, and most of the services were back online by 10 a.m. But they said this is evidence of a wider problem. Major internet service providers, they don't have the safeguards in place to block and filter these incorrect routes from propagating across the internet. It begins with a small company doing something erroneous. And then the really big problem is that Verizon, as a large company, could have actually said, this doesn't look right. We won't pass it on. But they didn't. They let it go out into the wider world, which affected everybody else. Now, this is, of course, Cloudflare's CTO saying this, so he's trying to push the blame onto Verizon, but then he also was involved in this, too, as his company. So, you know, Verizon's been pretty quiet about this. I guess they're probably embarrassed about it, and they're just fixing the problem. You know, they're just going to say, hey, we just won't do this again. But it does point to the fact that this whole internet routing system, you know, kind of shows that it relies on the honor system. There is no current method where you have to use a trust-based system, some kind of cryptography that says that you are the owner of a network and that you can take traffic of this size and nature. So, you know, it's something that Cloudflare is pointing to a solution that does exist called RPKI frameworks, but, you know, it's a little beyond my ability to discuss here. But basically, there possibly is a way to prevent this. But, you know, it is evidence of how fragile the internet is and how we do rely on the honor of companies to follow it, and we do rely on it for so many things, obviously this and other things that we do. Okay, so we have, let's check a few more minutes for the next break. So what we'll do is the last story. Let's see. Maybe what we'll do is we'll skip that until after the break, the one about our local Flemington company, and talk a little bit today what I was talking about. So there's a magazine I get as a member of the New Jersey Business and Industry Association. It's just called New Jersey Business. It's a pretty good magazine for, you know, we get tons of electronic magazines and paper magazines. This one is pretty easy to read and has some pretty good articles about the state of New Jersey business. It's not always timely because it's a magazine, monthly format, but it does have some pretty good articles. And this issue is devotion to the innovative state of New Jersey. And so I just picked out one thing that caught my eye. It was talking about, you know, when you're innovating and you're trying to create something new, especially in the internet world, one of the things you really need when you get started is a good lawyer. Now, our company, Zero Surge, was founded by Rudy Harford, who, you know, as these shows go on, will do a little bit more, and hopefully I can get Rudy on to really explain some of the history here. But what's appropriate for this article, it talks about, you know, having a good intellectual property lawyer. Now, your regular business lawyer isn't necessarily equipped to do IP laws. It's a specialty field within the legal profession, and it's good to get somebody who actually knows these things and knows more than just the basics. Because if you do have that billion-dollar idea, you want it protected. And there are ways to protect these ideas. So, excuse me, I want to take a quick sip here. So, without going into this entire article, I mean, basically it's saying, you know, look for a good IP lawyer, ask your friends, ask other entrepreneurs, you know, who they use, you know, get somebody who's in your corner from day one so that you know what to do once you come up with that million-dollar idea. And also protect yourself from, you know, say you thought you had that billion-dollar idea and find out somebody else already beat you to the punch, and you don't want to spend money getting investors lined up and then find out somebody's already beat you there. So there's a little sidebar piece that you know, we have time for here. It's called Five Ways to Make Your Internet Idea Patentable. Okay, by Jonathan Bick and Steve DePasquale. Since the Supreme Court ruling in 2014, most attorneys agreed that internet ideas are not patentable. Now, due to a new court ruling, most patent attorneys will say, well, it's not necessarily so. So in the 2014 Alice Corp versus CLS Bank case, the Supreme Court ruled that merely requiring a generic computer implementation fails to transform an abstract idea into a patent-eligible invention. So what that means is just because you thought of it and you want to put it on the internet doesn't make it patent-eligible. But there are some new court decisions that have said, well, there's a particular type of improvement which is unique to internet ideas which would be eligible for patent protection, namely in how the internet user interface is improved. Okay, so there was another case where the Supreme Court found that the patent for the act of swiping improved the existing interface technology and thus resulted in patent eligibility. Now you think, well, swiping, I mean, that's a common human gesture, but using it, doing that motion on a phone, I mean, somebody had to do that first. So, you know, if you're the first person to implement an idea using that technique, you can be the first to, you know, patent. So they gave some tips on implementing patents for the internet. So one would be using special hardware with your internet idea, combining cell phones or digital watches with software to implement an internet idea results in a patentable novelty. So when you want to patent something, it has to be novel, it has to be new. Having your internet idea result in the ability of using an internet device for a new purpose, such as a tablet, as local broadcasting hotspot, which results in a patentable invention. So using some hardware that exists for a new purpose. Using your internet idea to improve electronic device user interface. So if you're using a local cell tower to service a broader area, results in a patentable combination. So being able to have your cell phone do something that expands a network or some other device. And finally, making your internet idea change internet communication, such as changing the display to accommodate an internet user's disability. So specifying the particular type of data to be displayed and the specific way to display it also results in a patentable matter. So there is a huge push. If your website is not ADA compliant, you should do that. You should look into that. I know it's something we have to look into for ours. I know some of it is, but maybe not all of it. But as you update your websites, make sure that you make it ADA compliant. It is becoming a fact of the internet that you have to do that. You can get sued if somebody can't access your website because it's missing some ADA compliant way of presenting the information. So I would imagine it has to do with audio or being able to have a readable website for some a blind person, or a scalability so that a blind person, you know, somebody with low vision can expand or contract your website to fit their contrast or other vision needs. So, you know, that's something that you should consider for your website too. So those are some interesting things. If you want to read more, like I said, you go to NJBIA's website, and you know, if you belong to the organization and you've seen this magazine sitting on your desk, you know, it's worth a read. It's got some interesting articles. So we will hang out with have another commercial break here, and we'll come back with some more and talk about this local company making it into the big time.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump says the immigration crisis at the southern border is made worse by existing laws.
They have them because the law incentivizes criminals to bring children up and use those criminals to get people into our country.
He said he thought Congress would approve humanitarian aid.
And I believe the House is going to also be getting together with the Senate. Hopefully they can get something done.
Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren says detained immigrant kids have turned into pawns.
These children did not commit a crime. These children pose no threat to people here in the United States of America, and yet they are locked up for weeks, for months.
The House Oversight Committee has subpoenaed White House counselor Kellyanne Conway. She didn't show up to a hearing for violating the Hatch Act 10 different times. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Captain Obvious, and every day thousands of people book trips on Hotels.com. Trips you will later hate like. What's a hate like? It's when you like Becky's picture of another perfect waterfall, even though you kind of hate it. It's not that you hate Becky, it's that you hate that she's there, and you're at work listening to Lisa talk about her alleged food allergies. Don't hate like Becky's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there, do that, get rewarded.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Okay, we're back. Again, to give you a quick weather forecast, it is currently 87 degrees, 40% humidity, nice barometer right at almost 30 inches exactly, and low tonight's going to be 65 degrees. We're pretty much at the beginning of the heat wave of summer, but fortunately no rain in the forecast, at least the beginnings of rain looking like Friday night. Maybe some thunderstorms late, and then maybe some Saturday, Sunday. But, you know, possibly we'll have some sun during the day, during the weekend, hopefully. So back to what I promised, the local company. So there is a competition every year that Walmart has, I guess it's the sixth year. It's called their Open Call event. And what Walmart does is they're trying to involve more U.S.-based companies. Just like, you know, how we promote being made in the United States, obviously with the political climate. Even before that, Walmart was trying to promote more made in the USA businesses. They probably saw there's always a nice marketing need for that. And so they had hundreds of entrepreneurs, small businesses come to Bentonville, Arkansas, and they were hoping to land their products on the store shelves. During this sixth annual open call event, more than 100 companies were chosen out of the thousands that were there to get deals to be able to go into Walmart stores. So this is probably a watershed moment for any small business that wants to sell a consumer product. I mean, obviously, you want to sell. You could sell on Amazon, you could sell on eBay, you could sell on your website. But to actually get into a physical Walmart store is, you know, kind of the holy grail for these small companies. and little known, you know, companies can suddenly become well-known companies overnight. So in addition to their pitch meetings that they had, the two-day event provided information sessions for the supplier hopefuls. They included a supplier mentoring session, a discussion on how suppliers can grow their businesses, and a presentation on how to get products ready for retail. Wednesday morning featured the award-winning entrepreneur and CEO Larry Broughton sharing strategies on how entrepreneurs can take their businesses to the next level. Attendees received autographed copies of his book, which is nice, but I'm sure what they really wanted was to get on the shelves. So the Walmart CEO, Doug McMillan, who once worked as a buyer for the company, also addressed the entrepreneurs. He shared why buying local products makes economic sense and is good for the communities Walmart serves. He said, and I quote, "If we can create great local jobs, we're going to have better stores and better, stronger communities. We love to buy things that are close to our distribution centers and our stores because it creates those jobs, while also helping us be more efficient. So this is strategic and something we should be doing as a business. But we also bring an emotional component to this because we care about people. We want everybody who has anything to do with Walmart, whether they're a customer or an associate or a supplier of ours, to benefit." So the attendance, the companies that were in attendance represented 48 states, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Canada, Mexico, and even Australia. And let's see. So they manufacture their products, though, in 44 different states and District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. And so one of the winning companies sells a product called Magic Ninja Dust. Now, if you know the Flemington Ice Arena, I think it's called, over on Case Boulevard, also Next Gen Arena, I believe is what it's called. Sorry, I didn't write it down. I should have. The owners of those businesses, I guess they do a lot of, you know, weight training and things like that. And when you're doing weight training or gymnastics, you use a lot of chalk. And, you know, traditionally it's messy and, you know, the powder gets everywhere and people slip on it and things like that. So to make it more user-friendly, they created a liquid version of it that you put on almost like lotion on your hands. And the advantage is you use a lot less of it and it stays on your hands. And they were able to secure shelf space in Walmart's you know, and be able to get to the next level of this competition. So we're excited for them. They're a Flemington company. I reached out to them, and hopefully we will get them on a future show to talk about, you know, how they came up with this idea, some of their problems they had, maybe some of the successes, how they, you know, what kind of pitch they used to get Walmart's attention, and maybe that'll inspire some other local, you know, entrepreneur to do the same thing. I'm sure maybe they would even, you know, want to help. You know, it'd be nice if they have the time. We can even maybe have something with the chamber event with them. You know, maybe we'll talk to Chris about this. I think it would be a nice thing for local entrepreneur wannabes to learn about how, you know, you were able to successfully get into a retailer like Walmart. So congrats to them. And again, hopefully we'll have them on soon. So in the time I have left before the last segment, I wanted to do mention about we were supposed to have a guest. He was supposed to talk about his second place winning project from the hackathon this year. So I thought maybe at least describe it to you best I could. But it's pretty a novel idea, so I thought it's worth mentioning. And, you know, again, tomorrow, if you come to the meetup, you'll be able to see him, see it in person. So basically, Bose makes a pair of glasses that instead of having like a visual thing, they have speakers built into the earpieces. And what they do is they create a 3D sound sphere around your head so you can hear sounds coming from different directions. And what Peter did was he said, all right, well, how do I – what's a novel, innovative thing I can do with these glasses? And so he came up with the idea of having a play or a TV show or, you know, some kind of acting situation where you have a script and you want to rehearse. And what he found is that, you know, there's a large population of actors who don't read scripts when they want to learn a new role. They actually hire somebody to read to them out loud because they're audible learners. And so what he did was he feeds a script of some play or something, say Romeo and Juliet, and you can set it up. I believe the way it works is he can set up actors at different parts around you. So you could have Juliet here, you know, Romeo's here, and you can hear them talking across, you know, back and forth, and you can have your lines in between. And so what the way you prompt it is very simple. So there's three gestures. So you nod your head like that, and it reads the next line of the play. And when then it comes to your line, you can read your line. If you don't know your line, you tap your glasses a couple times like that, and it would read the first line of your line, so it prompt you to read it for you. And if you wanted to repeat a line from the other actor, you can shake your head, and it'll repeat the line over again for you. And so it was kind of a novel thing. It's a very simple idea, but sometimes the simplest ideas are, you know, the best ideas. And so what got us as judges to like it was, you know, working with hardware that's new. You know, sometimes there's connection issues. You know, he had to take his project from the room he was working in, bring it to another classroom where we had preliminary judging. It worked right away. And then when he went to the final judging in the stage, it worked right away. Everything connected every time. And so, you know, that was an important thing. And then his presentation was very good. He had, it wasn't technical. It was more about the story, about why you're doing this, talking about different actors who have different learning disabilities and things like that. And he coined the phrase theatrical industrial complex, which made me laugh. So, you know, he said something memorable. He had a memorable product, a memorable idea, and hopefully, you know, he'll be here tomorrow at the meetup. So before we go to our final segment, I'll just remind you that we have a meetup tomorrow. It's at the Lone Eagle Brewing Company, 7 o'clock. It's over in Flemington. If you need directions, it's right over by the Stengel Road. It's pretty easy to find. It's a nice place. We're upstairs. You go in, follow the stairs to your left, and the first half hour or so is meet and greet, networking, meeting people. And then we'll have the top three winners from the hackathon present their projects. We will have them, you know, answer questions, talk about what it was like doing the whole process. And importantly, too, is the first beer is free for those that are over 21. You don't need to be 21 to enter. You can be a minor and show up, but you just can't drink any beer. So we thank Bob King for that. He's one of the owners of Lone Eagle, and he's also a member of our group. So thank you, Bob, for hosting us. And with that, we'll have a commercial break and talk about historical innovation that I pulled up from this week.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.huntertonhealthcare.org.
Okay, I'm back. Let's see. So what I wanted to do today, the historical innovation, again, centers around retail. I think what we will do it was we'll, won't tell you who it is right away, see if you can guess. I'll just say that the company was founded by somebody who did not want to regret missing the internet boom. He was a vice president of a Wall Street firm, and then he moved out west, and he worked on his business plan for what became this company. Now, the original name for this company was Kadabra Incorporated. He wanted it to be a magical name, you know, like Abracadabra, which is kind of funny because 5 years later you had Alibaba in China that came in response to him. So the problem, though, it never became the name that this company that you know and love and hate has become, because his lawyer kept saying, well, you know what? It sounds more like cadaver. I don't think you want a website called cadaver. So he came up with another name. It was called Relentless. In fact, relentless.com still exists and forwards to this company. But again, his friends counseled him and said, Relentless does kind of sound sinister, so maybe you should come up with a better name. So he was looking for the name of a company, and he literally was going through the dictionary, is the legend is told. And he settled on this name because it was exotic and different, and he envisioned it for his internet enterprise. And he noted that this was the biggest river in the world. So if you haven't figured out, we're talking about Amazon and Jeff Bezos. So he planned on making this store the biggest bookstore in the world. And he chose Amazon because it starts with an A, because he figured when people are going to start listing internet companies, they'll list his first alphabetically. And so his whole innovation strategy was basically being first to market. He told a reporter back in when he started, there's nothing about our model that can't be copied over time. But you know, McDonald's got copied, and it's still built a huge multi-billion dollar company. A lot of it comes down to the brand name. Brand names are more important online than they are in the physical world. Now, whether you agree or not, I would say it's probably brand names, not that they're more important, maybe it's more valuable to an online company. Because, you know, you don't get to walk into a McDonald's. You don't get to walk into a Walmart with Amazon. At least now you can, but before you couldn't. And so why books? When he was reading about the internet back in the early 90s, and it, you know, they're projecting growth of 2,000%, and, you know, there's all these companies are going to start making lots of money on the internet. He created a list of 20 products that he thought could be marketed online. And then what he did was he narrowed that list down to what he felt were the five most promising products. That included compact discs, computer hardware, computer software, videos, and books. So it's interesting, that list. So compact discs, not a big market anymore. Computer hardware, you can almost argue phones have probably taken over computer hardware as far as dollars. Even TVs are down in sales. Computer software, I don't buy software from Amazon. So, you know, usually the companies sell direct now. Videos, obviously, he did have Amazon Prime. So he did, you know, pivot over to that part of it. But obviously we don't buy videos anymore, physical videos. And books. Well, some people still buy books. I buy books. Our family likes physical books, but, you know, that's probably the only product who will still keep selling, even the virtual version. So he decided that this new business would sell books online because there was a large worldwide demand for literature, the low unit price for books, and the huge number of titles that were available. So his business wasn't I'm going to sell you something. His business was, okay, I'm going to sell you something easier. You know, it was more about the ease of the ordering. And so he had to pick a product that had the biggest bang for his buck, because it wasn't really a novel idea to sell something mail order. I mean, mail order companies have existed since, you know, Montgomery Ward's and Sears and stuff. It was more that, you know, he had to pick something that he could take advantage of the unit cost that wasn't marketed for mail order. I mean, most people didn't buy books mail order back then. So, and then before I talk about the rest of that, I did look up their first TV commercial. Actually featured a former president of Stanford University. But their key words in their commercial was, it was fun, fast. The shipping was, you save on shipping. And also, as you ordered more and more books, the system would get to know you and then recommend other books that would be something that you would like. So even from the very beginning, one of his other innovative thoughts was, we should be using AI or machine learning or some kind of smarts into when we're selling to customers, because it's not just a one-time relationship. I'm not selling you this cup and you're going to drink from it and that's it. But this cup has coffee in it. So you want to know, what kind of coffee does he drink? Does he like, you know, organic coffee? Does he like dark roast, light roast? If he always drinks dark roast, then I'm going to push dark roast coffee to sell to him instead of wasting my time trying to sell him decaf when he never drinks decaf. And so that's important in the internet age, because as you're trying to leverage the internet and try to reach out over a large customer base, you only have so many advertising dollars and so many eyeballs you can get to at one time with your limited resources as a small company. And so it's important, if you know who your customer is and what kind of customer you have, you'll be able to sell them more efficiently. So some trivia about Amazon. The first book sold on Amazon was Douglas Hofstadter's Fluid Concepts and Creative Analogies: Computer Models of the Fundamental Mechanisms of Thought. So it wasn't your beach read, I imagine. In the first 2 months of business, Amazon sold to all 50 states and already 45 countries. Within 2 months, Amazon sales were up to $20,000 a week. Now, when he was running this service out of his garage, he realized also with the book business, in order for him to sell wholesale, there was minimums from these publishing companies. And usually the minimum price or the minimum quantity was 10. Well, he can't buy 10 books from every publisher whenever somebody wants to order a book. And he had no warehouse space for all this. So what he did was, he found there was a book that was out of print that he always would order alongside the other books. So say he wanted to order, the Stephen King novel. And the publisher says, well, you got to order at least 10 of them, 10 books from us before we'll sell you that one Stephen King novel. So he would put an order in for one Stephen King novel and 9 of this other book that was always out of print. And the publishers would be, all right, well, we'll sell you the one book that we have and we'll back order the other 9. Well, the back order never happened. So it became a joke within Amazon. And so that was how he kind of was able to manage some of the growth. He did also manage a lot of lawsuits early on, because he was saying that they were the world's largest bookstore, and Barnes & Noble sued them in 97, saying that they're not a bookstore because they're a book broker. They ended up settling out of court. Walmart did sue them in 98. Saying that they stole trade secrets by hiring some of their executives. They settled again. And also there was what was the other lawsuit? Oh, for their one-click checkout. They were the first to really push the concept of the quickest checkout. I don't know if you've ever ordered before the 90s. I remember ordering something where it was it took 5 minutes to check out because you had to go through all these forms. So, all right, so we're coming close to the end of the show. That was our little history lesson for Amazon. And so I'd like to thank again all the new fans who are watching on Facebook or YouTube or listened. Thanks to the Chamber. Thanks to the other shows. I've been learning something from each of you. I've been watching your shows, too, to get some pointers. Thank Mark and his team for economic development, the gang back at Zero Surge, wife and kids, the monthly lunch crew that we had today. Cody, you're crazy, and you'll get to meet him in August. And, again, the Hack Hunterdon community will be seeing you tomorrow night at Lone Eagle. So, and to the rest of you innovators out there, the original meaning of innovator was that you're a rebel, so keep rebelling against the doubters and make your ideas a reality.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The first Democratic presidential debate is happening tonight in Miami. Because there are so many candidates this time, the Democratic National Committee chose to randomly split the 20 candidates who qualified for the debate. 10 of them will face off tonight. The rest will appear on Thursday night. Robert Mueller will be speaking publicly on the Russia investigation. Despite the special counsel's vow not to follow up on last month's statement, he will comply with Democratic subpoenas to testify before two House committees, one of them the Intelligence Committee, Chairman Adam Schiff.
We look forward to his testimony. It will be an open session. Each of our members will have an opportunity to ask him questions.
President Trump spoke on Fox Business.
Our reaction is it never ends. We had no obstruction. We had no collusion.
Mueller will testify on July 17th. This is USA Radio News.
Between the unbeatable performance and lower operating costs, electric cars are going places like never before. In fact, a survey by Drive Change Drive Electric tells us that 8 out of 10 Northeasterners agree electric is the future of automobiles. Travel expert Zach Houghton.
The vast majority of Northeast drivers, about 3 in 4, believe it's important to move towards electric cars, and 88% also want to reduce their vehicle emissions. So while drivers are interested in these cars, the problem is that most of them don't understand how and where to charge or even realize that charging stations are available to them.
Houghton told us a new campaign called Destination Electric hopes to change all that by celebrating businesses that support driving electric in communities across the Northeast.
Destination Electric businesses all have a storefront decal to alert visitors that charging is nearby. So far, over 100 local businesses have joined Destination Electric to demonstrate their support for electric cars and to let their customers know that they could be charging while they visit.
Visit Drive Electric US to learn more.
Employees at online home furnishing retailer Wayfair in Boston are setting up for a walkout to protest the company's decision to sell $200,000 worth of furniture to a government contractor who runs a detention center for migrant children in Texas. This is the second attempt to get them to cancel their planned sale. The military says two U.S. service members were killed in Afghanistan. This happened a day after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in Afghanistan in Kabul.
My condolences certainly go out to them. I'm praying for them, for their families, and for all the soldiers that were around them.
Meantime, Iran's supreme leader says Iranians will not budge or change their stance following new U.S. sanctions targeting Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and his associates. Recently, Iran quadrupled its production of low-enriched uranium to be on a pace to break one of the nuclear deal's terms by tomorrow. You're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
North Dakota's only abortion clinic is suing over two state laws it says forces doctors to lie.
Okay, well, that's good
the
to
Center
know,
for Reproductive Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of the Red River Women's Clinic and the American Medical Association over a measure that requires doctors to tell patients that a so-called medication abortion is reversible. Molly Duane is a staff member with the Center for Reproductive Rights and says the laws violate the First Amendment rights of doctors.
Physicians should be able to have open and honest conversations with their patients without interference from the government.
The State Department says there's international condemnation against the government in Caracas that continues to spend millions of dollars on the country's military to keep dictator Nicolas Maduro in power and nothing on humanitarian aid. USA Radio's John Clemens has more on the story.
Special Representative for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, says Maduro spent $200